I've been prepared to die for my principles for a very long time.
Threats don't move me. But what about you? Do you have any principles, Belcour? Are you prepared to die for them? Are you prepared to die for the Empire? Here. Now. He stood, drew his blaster, and pointed it at Belcour's head. Belcour blinked, swallowed. No. Cham holstered his weapon and sat. I thought not. Why would you want to die? You're a creature of ambition, Belcour. That makes you easy to read and easy to play. And it means that between the two of us, you're the only one with anything to lose. Let me show you something. Cham removed a portable holo crystal and palm-sized player from one of the pouches on his belt. He placed it on the table and activated it. Belcour watched images of his previous meetings with Cham played back at him. Dozens of them. He heard his own voice telling Cham or one of Cham's agents about a shipment coming at this or that date. Intelligence about the number of Imperial soldiers on guard at this or that spice production plant. Patrol schedules and how to avoid them. Countless moments of incrimination. Innumerable incidences of treason. Belcour could feel himself deflating, feel the air going out of him. He looked around the cave for the imager, certain this meeting too was being recorded. "You're recording this meeting too," he said, his voice small. "Of course," Cham said. "You're mine. You've always been mine. And now you know it. That's the honesty I promised you. Do we understand each other now?" Belcour nodded, reeling. He felt dizzy. "We understand each other." "Good. Now, I can be a kinder master to you than the Empire has been to Ryloth. No one has to lose here, Belcour. That's honesty, too. But I need more from you now than I've ever required before. I need more than information. I need commitment. I need collaboration." Belcour was shaking his head. "I can't. I won't." "You can, and you will. You must." And despite his protests, Belcour knew he would. He had to. His thoughts were swirling and he saw no other out. "Tell me what you want," he said softly. "First, tell me everything about the Perilous. Is Tal bringing his full staff? Any other dignitaries aboard?"
"I only know about Tar," Belcour said. "I'm sure his staff will be there, but no one else of note."
Cham studied his face as if searching his eyes for a lie.
"Honesty," I said.
"That's the truth," Belcour said. "Just Tar."
Cham pursed his lips.
"I believe you, Belcour. So, here is what I need from you."
Cham leaned back in his chair and for the next half hour outlined what he required. Belcour listened to it in growing disbelief. He'd had no idea Cham had so many men and so much materiel at his disposal. He'd underestimated the Twi'lek, and it had cost him. At last, Cham finished and asked,
"Do you understand?"
Belcour nodded. It felt like surrender.
"Good," Cham said. "Now for more honesty. If this fails, I'll expose you."
"What?"
"I said I'll give you the assistance you want, but I can't give you a guarantee of success."
Cham smiled, but without mirth.
"I'm not trying to guarantee success. I'm trying to guarantee your very best efforts. No half measures, Belcour. You're in fully. We succeed together or die together, each in our way. Understood?"
Belcour could not even bring himself to speak. He just gave a brisk nod of his head.
"Good,"
Cham said.
"Then let's get out of here."
They walked side by side, back through the tunnel, until they could see Isfal's silhouette in the cave mouth. Something struck Belcour. He faced Cham.
If I hadn't agreed to this, you'd have killed me, wouldn't you? Or she would have.
Cham didn't hesitate.
I'd have done it, not her.
That's why this cave. It goes back a way. No scavenging animals, and the dry air desiccates a corpse with surprising speed. So I would have just left you back there and saved myself the trouble and dirt of burying your body. No one would have ever found you.
Belcour stared into the darkness of the cavern behind them, imagining it as his tomb, then back at Cham.
But it didn't come to that, Cham said. Because you're smart, Belcour. And now I'm going to tell you something important. You listening?
Belcour nodded.
The moment you get out of here, you're going to start having second thoughts. You're going to start thinking about how you can turn this around, save yourself, and throw me over. But you can't. I have people everywhere, Belcour. That's how I knew about Tar. All the information you've ever offered me in the past, I already knew it. I just wanted you to offer it so I could record you doing so, put you in my pocket so that I could take you back out and spend you when I needed to. So now, I'm spending you. You slip up, try to flip this, and I'll know about it the moment it happens. And then, I'll make everything known.
You committed those crimes, not me. The words sounded stupid to Belcour even as he said them.
Yes, but you abetted them. Dead Imperials, Belcour. Lots of them. The Empire will make those your responsibility, and no matter how you spin it, no one would forgive that.
So when you walk out of here and the uncertainty sets in, you remember that I am all you have. But if you betray me, there's nothing coming for you but an ugly death and more scandal for your family. But, if you do as I ask, this will work to both our benefits. Tar will be dead, Mors will be disgraced, and will arrange for you to look the hero somehow. Moff Drey. Sounds good, no?
I'll still be in your pocket,
Belcour said. But you'll be alive. And a morph. That's better than the alternative.
Belcour said nothing.
Goodbye, Belcour. Start making arrangements. I'll be in touch soon. Oh, and welcome to the rebellion.
Belcour walked out of the cave, past Isfal without really seeing her, and returned to his aircar. Once inside, he sat perfectly still for a moment before everything exploded out of him. He slammed his fist against the instrument panel again and again and again and again. Blast! 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 He stopped only when he realized that he was bleeding. The pain helped refocus him. He cradled the hand against his shirt, fired up the engines, and headed back to Lesu in a haze. About halfway, the second thoughts Cham had anticipated started to bubble up. As best as his addled mind allowed, he turned the situation over in his mind, examining it from various angles. Other than collaborating with Cham or turning himself in, he saw only one other option. He could run. Take up in some isolated location in the galaxy and live out his life in obscurity. Cham could still expose him, of course, but he'd be long gone. But by the time he saw Lesu's lights in the distance, he'd dismissed the idea of running. He'd always been compromised, so he was in Cham's pocket. He could manage that. He could manage Cham. They'd need each other. When he was Moff. And all it would take was the murder of one Twi'lek senator. Belcour could live with that.
Cham and Isval watched the darkened distance swallow Belcor's aircar.
He didn't mention Veda or the Emperor?
Isval asked.
He didn't. I gave him the opportunity and he was off balance. He'd have said something or I'd have seen it in his face. He doesn't know.
Isval exhaled.
Then the intel is good. Veda and Palpatine are coming with Tar.
Cham nodded.
It could still be a trap. Belcor just might not be in on it. They could suspect him of collaborating.
No,
Isval said. We've been careful and so has he. And Mors is an idiot. She sat up there on that moon for years and let Belcor run the show, undermining her at every turn. No, they just haven't told her that Vader and the Emperor are coming. They're replacing her, Cham, and making a big show of it. Probably bring in a garrison of stormtroopers, too. We're overdue for some heavier boots.
Cham nodded.
I think you're probably right.
Then we're a go?
She was bouncing on the balls of her feet.
We're a go,
Cham answered. And pity poor Belcor. When he learns what he's actually signed on for. Isval stiffened.
He's filth, Cham. Imperial filth. Don't be sentimental. Not about him. Not about them. Not ever.
Her vehemence didn't surprise him, given what she'd experienced in her youth.
It's not sentiment. It's principle. What am I without that? On the winning side, I hope.
Isval said. She changed the subject.
Now what?
Now we get everything ready, Cham said.
And I mean everything.
This is the operation we've been waiting for. Mobilize everyone and get all the weapons and ships ready for use. We'll have full Imperial patrol schedule so we can move things into place. Let's find out if we're as good as we think we are.
We are, she affirmed. Consider it handled. But hear me. I'm heading back to Lesu for a day or two. I'll see to matters from there.
Cham turned to face her. Her beauty rarely registered with him, so often was it hidden behind the mask of her anger.
But right then, in the dim light of the moons, she looked as vulnerable as she had the day he'd first met her.
And as beautiful. He quieted the feelings for her that sometimes bubbled up. They were a complication he couldn't afford. She'd said not to be sentimental. He wouldn't be. What's in Lesu? He asked, concerned.
The mask came back up. It's just personal business, all right?
He didn't pry. He had no right to pry.
All right. Just be careful.
I'm always careful.
Sure you are, Cham said, smiling. Isval had rented another small garret in an underground housing complex in a poor part of Lesu. The thin walls allowed in noise from the adjacent rooms, shouting from one, shrill laughter from another. The smell of someone's dinner leaked through the shared ventilation system. Isval found she was hungry, but not for food.
The sight of Dre, with his impeccably combed hair, his unwrinkled, sharply creased clothes, his intolerably smug, self-assured expression, had made her need more acute.
She'd felt it coming on days before, like one of Ryloth's sandstorms, brewing red and blurry on the horizon, until finally, it exploded in violence. She'd told Cham she'd be in Lesu 2 days, but she planned to use only the one. The need was too strong, the pressure, the agitation. She couldn't wait 2 days. She had to do it tonight. She had to. She'd be useless to Cham if she didn't, too sloppy, too angry. She needed release. She knew how she appeared to others, with her pacing, her curtness, always on the verge of an explosion. Servitude had made her that way. If she was a monster, the Empire had spawned her. Her reflection stared back at her from the tiny mirror mounted on the wall. She'd donned a headband of the kind they loved, makeup to accent her high cheekbones, deep-set eyes, and full lips. It was the mask she wore when she hunted. It wasn't her in the mask. It was the her she'd been, but made monstrous. The pale blue expanse of her skin looked like still water. How often had she heard those words out of the lips of some imperial? Too often. She imagined them thinking that if they were nice, if they dressed oppression up in fine words, they were then somehow giving her a choice. But they weren't. They were just lying to themselves about what they took from her and why she was forced to give it. She'd never had a choice, not a real one, not until she'd strangled that corporal with a headband and fled to the resistance. But she carried the scars. She'd always carry them, not on her skin, but on her soul. And she picked them open when she needed a reminder of pain or needed to add fuel to her anger. Servitude and its degradations had broken her. She knew she'd never put herself back together, not completely, but she didn't care. The break had made her jagged, and now she used her edges and points to cut them. They'd made her into something. A slave, a possession, a thing. But after she'd escaped them, the making had continued. She'd gone on hammering the metal of her spirit until she'd made herself into something new, a warrior, and often enough, a killer. And Cham Syndulla had given her a place, and she loved him for that. For him it was a cause, but not for her. For her, it was just the vector she used to vent her anger against the Empire. She tried out a smile in the mirror as she hung a necklace around her neck, found the smile serviceable despite the sharpened eye teeth. She wore fitted pants and a shirt that showed her bare midriff. She threw a sheer, shimmering robe over the hole, knowing the robe hugged her curves as she moved. She hid a blaster in a holster at the small of her back and her vibroblade in the leg wraps around her left calf. She hesitated for a moment, recalling Cham's words about principles. She knew he would disapprove of what she did, of what she'd done a dozen times, and that his disapproval wouldn't be solely based in the risk she took, but also on principle. Principle. She paraphrased for herself a response to him, and it freed her to move. We do what we must to win, Cham. They're filth, and they deserve what they get. She found she only half believed herself. Cham must have been influencing her more than she'd realized, but half was enough with the need on her. She headed out and up the stairs, past a drunk sleeping in a heap against the wall and onto the street. The thoroughfare filled her senses, the sounds of traffic and the hum of passers-by, the smell of cooking fires, spice pipes, and the sweaty, dry stink of a typical Ryloth night. The wind painted her robe against her form, and she felt eyes on her, gazes lingering on her sleek figure. But she ignored them. She hailed a service car with a raised arm, and her curves and makeup drew one quickly. She told the driver to take her to the Octagon, one of the main plazas in Lesu, bordered on all eight sides by cantinas and clubs, frequented by Imperials and working girls and men. She'd not hunted there before. The Octagon sat about halfway up Lesu's spire, dug deeply into the stone. The bottom level of the plaza was 30 meters down, and a series of carved stone stairways, tunnels, and balconies, all torchlit, led up to ever higher tiers and more stairways, creating a maze-like warren that eventually descended back to street level. Various cantinas and clubs were burrowed out of the stone, their interiors hidden from view. A steady stream of Imperial vehicles and smiling Imperial officers, often in the company of Twi'lek escorts, made their way to and from the Octagon's various levels. Pennons flapped in the wind, and lighted signs and paid hawkers advertised for this or that establishment. Isval eyed them from the window of her service car and hated them all. "Level 7, please," she said, and the driver set her down on one of the tiers of level 7, the second one down. The vehicle's door opened and the smells hit her instantly. The echoes of her previous life. Smoke and perfume and spice. Laughter and music bounced up from the lower levels. An older, paunchy officer in his dress grays eyed her as the service car flew off. He propositioned her with raised eyebrows and a knowing smirk, but she ignored him and headed down a nearby stairway.
"Stack up!"
he called after her. The maze was littered with dark corners, secret nooks, narrow tunnels, and blind alleys. Drunks and spice users and working girls lingered here and there, the castaways of Lesu's vice trade. As Isfal descended the octagon's tiers, the vices grew worse, the lighted signs more graphic. She'd spent her youth on level one, the hole as it was known, and the hole was where she would hunt. With a false smile and long-practiced skill, she avoided or extricated herself from the groping hands of drunk or spice-hazed Imperials on her way down. One of them removed himself too slowly, so she put a knee in his groin and left him moaning on a stairway. Laughter from above reminded her that she had to be careful about being seen. She was sweating by the time she reached the bottom, and the stink of level one brought it all back to her. The degradations, the hunger, the abuse, the constant, unrelenting desperation. Smoke and stink made a fog of the air. Torches were rare. Signs were dim or unlit. Humans, Twi'leks, and other sentients moved through the dark, stifling air like ghosts, too ashamed of their tastes to engage in them in anything other than near darkness. She moved among them, a ghost herself, looking for a likely spot and a likely target. She had both shortly. She sat in a nook not far from a spice and vice club, cloaked in the darkness and her anger, and watched a junior officer walk out of the club with a young, underfed Twi'lek girl on his arm. The escort had seen maybe 20 summers, and she wore barely enough clothing to cover herself. The officer pawed at her as they walked through the night, his sweaty face flushed with the heat and his expectations of what was to come. He leaned over, stumbling, and murmured something in her ear. She smiled, the false smile that Isval knew well and had worn often. She eyed him with contempt and growing rage. He was just some junior lieutenant, probably fresh off a transport from the Corps, who thought wearing dress grays and carrying a weapon gave him a claim on Ryloth's resources and women. Isfal dug down to mine her resolve, found it, and stepped out of the nook. Her sudden appearance brought both the officer and the girl up short. But his surprised look quickly gave way to a leer as he looked Isfal up and down. There was no one else in the immediate area. The officer's drink-reddened face split in a sloppy smile and slurred words emerged.
Aren't you pretty? Why don't you join us?
Isval sidled close, smiling, while she reached around to the small of her back. When she stood before him, she pulled the blaster and slammed its grip into his jaw. Teeth and blood spattered the street, and he fell in a groaning pile. The girl gave a single startled exclamation and looked as though she might run.
No, stay! Help me, Isval said. She disarmed the officer, grabbed him under the armpits, and dragged him back into the dark nook. The girl did not help her, but followed tentatively, warily.
What's your name?
Isval asked, standing over the officer. The girl blinked and said nothing.
I'm not going to hurt you, Isval said.
The officer moaned. His hand twitched. Isval stepped on it, felt a crunch, and the officer moaned again.
Ryan,
the girl said softly. Her eyes darted between Isval and the officer.
What are you... Are you robbing us?
You and this... She kicked the officer. Aren't and us, no matter what he told you.
I don't... What?
Name your clan, Isval said.
Ryan looked away in shame.
You don't have one,
Isfal said, nodding. She said what she'd said many times before.
Not anymore. Listen to me, Ryan. I used to stand where you're standing. I spent 3 years in the hole before I escaped.
There was no hope in Ryan's eyes.
Escape? There's no escape from this.
There is, if you want there to be.
Ryan looked up.
How?
Come with me. I'll take you out of here. I have a place you can stay. Start again, away from this. I know. You don't trust me. Why would you? But my offer is genuine.
Ryan backed up a step as if Isfal had offered to harm her rather than help. Isfal was not surprised. Hope and trust didn't appear much among the workers in the Octagon.
I can't.
You can. You should. Look at me. Look. I'll help you.
She was shaking her head.
They'll come after me.
Isfal didn't lie.
They might. But they probably won't. They don't even know your full name. And once you're gone, you're gone. And if you want to, you can stay gone.
I can't.
The officer groaned. Isfal drew her vibroblade.
What are you going to do?
Ryan asked, horrified.
What should be done to all of them?
Isfal answered and knelt down, blade bare.
Don't!
Ryan said. She hurried forward and knelt beside Isfal, her eyes pleading. She placed her fingers on Isfal's wrist.
Don't, all right? I'll go with you, but don't do this.
I don't want you to come with me to save him,
Isfal snapped.
I want you to come with me to save you.
What's he to you?
Ryan glanced at the officer, back at Isfal.
He's nothing, but he didn't do anything bad to me.
He would have,
Isfal snapped.
And he's a soldier of the Empire. He's done something bad to all of us.
I know that, Ryan said. But don't, all right? Just don't. I'll come with you. I want to. I'm just afraid.
Voices from the walkway outside their nook froze them both into silence. But the sounds soon passed.
This one owes you his life, then,
Isfal said. She stood and kicked the officer in the head. He didn't even groan, just went limp.
Come on. You can't go back to get anything.
There's nothing for me to go get.
Isfal took Ryan by the hand and walked her out of the pit, past the smoke and leers and spice and vice, ascending, and by the time she reached the top, she felt as light as she had in months. The feeling wouldn't last, she knew, but she'd enjoy it while it did. She wondered what Cham would think of her if he knew what she did, what she had to do. She thought he wouldn't understand. Cham preached principle, but only those who'd never descended to level one of the Octagon thought in terms of principle. Isfal knew better. Maybe Ryan knew better. The real world didn't well accommodate principles. When they reached the top of the Octagon, sweaty and out of breath, they fell in with the crowd there. Ryan looked about wide-eyed, breathed deep the night stink.
How long's it been?
Isfal asked.
Weeks since I left the hole,
Ryan answered. You still good? Isfal asked. This was the point when previous girls had turned back. Rarely, but it sometimes happened.
I'm good,
Ryan said.
Never go back,
Isfal said, and Ryan nodded. Now let's get you home. A new home.
A service car took the two of them back to the garret Isfal had left earlier in the night. She led Ryan up the stairs, the drunk was still there, and into the garret.
It's not much,
Isfal said, showing the room to her.
But it's safe and it's yours.
What do you mean? You're not staying? Isn't this your place?
No, it's yours. It's paid up through the year.
The year?
There's food in the cabinets and a few hundred credits in the drawer by the cooler. That ought to be enough to get you situated.
Hearing all that, Ryan looked unsteady. She reached for a chair, slid into it. Her eyes welled. Isfal stripped off her headdress, her clothing, and slipped back into her ordinary shirt, trousers, and weapons belt. Ryan watched her throughout.
I don't understand this, or you. What are you? Why are you doing this?
I told you,
Isfal said, looking in the small mirror. She took a rag, wet it from water in a jug, and wiped off the mask.
I used to be what you are. What you were. I just want to help. I wish someone had helped me.
That's not what I mean, Ryan said. Why me? I'm just a nobody.
You're not nobody. You're not.
I picked you by chance.
You were with an Imperial and you two were alone.
So you look for them? Imperials to kill? Why?
Isfal looked back at her by way of her reflection in the mirror.
You have to ask.
Ryan could not hold her reflected eyes.
Have you done that before? Killed Imperials?
This time Isfal looked back at her own reflection.
You have to ask.
Ryan said nothing, but she shivered.
I have a friend, Isfal said. He wants to save the whole planet. But that's too big for me, too much. I just want to save someone. A few people. Maybe you.
Ryan smiled. Isfal cleared her throat and gathered her things.
Take care of yourself, Ryan. I don't normally check back.
Dangerous for both of us.
Normally? You've done this for other girls?
I have.
Sounds like you've already saved a few someones. Can I ask how many?
Many. Doesn't matter.
And each time you...
Mentally, Isfal finished the sentence.
Killed someone? I'm going now,
Isfal said.
Wait, I don't even know your name.
You don't need to. Goodbye, Ryan.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Not just for saving me, but for not doing it.
Isfal stopped in the doorway but didn't turn. Over her shoulder, she said,
Why do you care so much?
Ryan shook her head, shifted on her seat.
I don't know, but it has to stop sometime, doesn't it? The violence. The killing. Someone has to stop or it'll never end. Right? Maybe I'm saving you.
She laughed. Isfal looked down at her hands but didn't reply.
What is it?
Ryan asked.
Did I say something wrong? I'm sorry.
You didn't say anything wrong, Isfal said. You probably didn't spend a lot of time in the hole, though. Good fortune, Ryan. Don't go back, all right?
That's it?
The girl asked.
That's it.
With that, Isfal left the garret, another girl lifted out of bondage. Some of those she'd helped in the past had drifted back, but most didn't. Their new lives weren't easy, but at least they were no longer slaves. She hailed a service car, and as the vehicle moved off, Ryan's words replayed themselves for her.
It has to stop sometime, doesn't it?
Isfal didn't see how it could stop, not for her. She had the driver take her back to the Octagon Level 2.
You don't look like a Level 2 kind of lady, he said to her.
You'd be surprised,
she answered. She exited the car and headed down into the deeper dark. She found the nook soon enough, the Imperial still lying there semi-conscious, his hand broken, his face purpling from the blow she'd struck him. Spit and blood pooled on the ground near his mouth. She pulled her vibroblade and held it to his throat. His eyes blinked open. She imagined he could hardly see.
Don't,
he murmured. She stared at his pain-clouded eyes a long while, the blade ready. She lifted it from his neck.
"Ryan saved your life tonight," she said. "Remember that, because if you ever go looking for her, I'll come back. You hear me? You hear?"
Uh-huh.
He groaned assent. She sheathed the knife.
"So, it's settled that you'll live. But you still owe me pain."
She kicked him in the ribs once, twice, felt them give way with an audible snap.
He gasped in agony, moaned. She stepped over him, straddling him, grabbed his shirt in her fist, and punched him in the face again and again until he was as limp in her grasp as a child's doll. She dropped him to the ground and stared at him, her breath coming hard. She looked at her knuckles, raw and bleeding, just like the rest of her. She was broken, and it would never stop. Not for her. Eyes watched her as she stepped out of the alley and headed up a nearby flight of stairs. By the time she'd put a full level behind her, she heard the shouts from below. She'd been sloppy, hadn't covered her tracks, hadn't, as Cham always warned her to do, thought through her exit.
But beatings happened often in the Octagon, and she appeared to be just another Twi'lek slave. She put three levels beneath her feet and still heard no pursuit.
By the time she'd retained another air car, the need was gone. She could once more think clearly, and her mind was already turning to the preparations she needed to make to ready things for the attack on Ta and Vader. Cham's plan was elaborate and extremely risky, but she loved the brazenness of it. They had 9 days to get everything ready.
Chapter 5.
Cham paced the cracked stone of the crowded landing bay. He smiled to himself, thinking he was worse than Isval. All he needed to do was grumble some, and the likeness would be perfect. The underground base on Ryloth's third moon seethed with activity. A mishmash of technology, droid ships, and weapons sat arrayed on the launch bay's floor, with dozens of Twi'lek engineers and droid assistants hovering over them like worried mothers. Parts and tools lay in neat arrangements on the floors, the workers and droids plucking what they needed as they needed it. No one even glanced up at him, so intensely were they focused on their work. Cham and his agents had been buying and stealing and building ships and weapons for years. During that time, he'd been filling weapons caches on Ryloth and Ryloth's moons, from crates of small arms to makeshift landing bays filled with droid tri-fighters and vulture droid fighters.
He had a large force at his disposal, and he'd built it under the nose of the Empire, all with the compelled assistance of Belcour Dre.
Over the years, his engineers, but particularly Callan, who was a genius with artificial intelligence, had learned how to reprogram the brains in the droid fighters so they could operate without direction from a central droid control ship. They wouldn't be of much use in a dogfight with crewed ships, but dogfights were not part of Cham's plan. He ran through the steps of the plan in his mind, doubts tugging at his resolve. He was committing everything, his people and his resources, to this one play. It would be worth it if he killed Vader and the Emperor. That could trigger a galaxy-wide rebellion, and in that chaos, with the Empire's resources spread thin, he could work to make Ryloth free. Otherwise, he didn't dwell on the otherwise. A free Ryloth, that was his goal. And if he had to bring down an Empire to do it, he was prepared to do so. The tiny comm link implanted in his ear canal carried Isval's voice to him, as if she was speaking directly into his brain. She had a similar unit implanted, which allowed them to hear even each other's whispers, but not be overheard by nearby listeners. Cham's communications engineers had created a comm subnet that rode on a group of old Clone Wars satellites orbiting Ryloth along with the rest of the war's detritus.
The comm sats gave the movement a secure private network all over the planet and just beyond the orbit of the farthest moon.
All's ready down here, she said. All three teams are briefed.
He bit down twice to activate the implant.
You're on a decoy team, yes?
She didn't hesitate before answering.
No, I'm leading the primary. I have to.
Isval!
There's no discussion here, Cham. I'm the best chance we have. Besides, I have to. For Pock.
He couldn't argue with her thinking or her sentiment, but the thought of losing her made his legs go weak. He relied on her too much, cared for her too much. He remembered Pock's death, the sound of him choking, dying.
I know what you're thinking. But if this goes wrong, you won't need me anymore anyway. You won't even need you. There won't be much of a movement left to command.
She was right, and he knew it. Then let's make sure it doesn't go wrong.
I've checked and double-checked. I see it in my sleep.
Cham did too, and he'd triple-checked his thinking, and it all seemed solid. But they'd never planned anything on this larger scale with so many moving parts and contingencies.
If we don't bring down the shields, we abort.
If we don't short the shields, there'll be nothing to abort because we'll never even get started.
She was right about that too, and her calm helped steady him. Normally she was agitated and restless, but she turned as calm as still water when action impended. Cham was the opposite, normally calm and controlled, but antsy in the face of imminent action. He worried for his people, probably too much for a revolutionary. Once he'd have led missions like this, now he only planned them. I've become a bureaucrat, he muttered.
Just don't let yourself get lazy,
she joked, and he chuckled. Her tone turned serious.
When do the last droid ships go?
He glanced around at the 36 or so vulture droids arranged on the landing bay.
Tonight, I think. When Belcor gives us the all clear.
Belcor had provided them with information about Imperial patrols, incoming ships, and sensor scans. Cham had used the information to move the droid fighters and mines to the edge of the system unnoticed.
And speaking of bureaucrats, how's our little Belcor handling this?
Oh, I think he's seeing things in his sleep, too.
No indication he knows about Vader and the Emperor?
None. Cham paused, then said, 2 days, Isval. Our intel has the perilous prepping.
2 days. We're ready, Cham.
We're ready, he echoed,
saying it as though he could make it true by speaking with enough conviction. 2 days later, Cham sat in the makeshift command center on Ryloth's third moon. Three of his comrades shared the room with him. Gobi at the subspace transmitter, his stubby fingers ready to transmit commands. Zira, monitoring the sensor readouts from the probe droids, her heavy-lidded eyes taking in the rapid stream of data displayed on the screen. And Callan, the consulting engineer. Zira's data processing droid, D4L1, stood beside her chair, a hot link connecting him to the incoming data stream. 9 view screens mounted on the wall showed the outer reaches of Ryloth's system, as seen from the half-dozen probe droids they'd positioned in the system's asteroid belt. The rest of the droid ships they'd prepared lurked in the asteroid belt too, powered down to almost zero, waiting for Gobi's remote command to activate. A cloud of mines floated in space, ornaments hanging in the black, waiting for the perilous to emerge from hyperspace. For the 10th time in the past 10 minutes, Cham wondered if Belcor had lost his nerve and betrayed him, or given him bad information. And for the 10th time he forced himself to stop thinking about it. If Belcor had betrayed them, the movement would be crippled with nothing to show for it. But Belcor hadn't betrayed them. He couldn't, because Cham had made clear what the consequences would be. No, things were going as planned. And if they continued that way, then thousands of Imperials would soon be dead, including the Emperor himself.
Not a terrorist, he reminded himself, but a freedom fighter.
Everything he had worked to achieve for years was about to fail or bear fruit, and all he could do was watch it happen via instantaneous subspace transmission from over 600,000 kilometers away. A bureaucrat indeed.
Vader and the Emperor strode onto the central tier of the Perilous's bridge. Royal guards followed and took flanking positions at the main lift behind them.
Crew members scurried around or sat at their stations, all of them about the business of preparing a hyperspace jump for one of the Empire's most sophisticated, powerful starships. Captain Lewitt stood near them but kept a few paces of deck between them. He avoided looking directly at Vader, his discomfort with Vader's presence palpable. The captain turned to the Emperor, whose face was shrouded in the shadow of his hood.
I trust everything went well aboard the Defiance, my lord.
Hyperdrive is online and course is set, sir, the helm called, and the information was echoed up to Lewitt.
I'd be honored if you'd give the order, my lord, said Lewitt.
Oh no, captain, the Emperor said, waving a hand. I'm a political leader, not a military one. Proceed as you would normally.
Engage the hyperdrive, the captain called, and the command caused a ripple of activity to flow along the bridge crew.
Vader felt the faint thrum in the deck as the Perilous's powerful hyperdrive engaged. Stars and the black of space disappeared, replaced by the blue churn of hyperspace.
En route to Ryloth, called the helm.
Dim the view,
Lewitt ordered, and the transparasteel darkened until hyperspace was no longer visible. He turned to the Emperor.
My lord, if you and Lord Vader would prefer to retire to your quarters, I will let you know the instant we arrive in Ryloth's system.
I think we will remain on the bridge for now, Captain,
the Emperor said.
Very good, sir,
said Lewitt, pursing his lips under his bristly gray mustache.
It won't be long.
The captain moved off, looking over the shoulders of his crew, issuing orders and otherwise staying away from Vader. The bridge crew settled into its rhythm.
I think you make him uncomfortable, Lord Vader,
said the Emperor. Vader made most of the naval officers he encountered uncomfortable. To them, he was a towering dark figure outside their chain of command, who had emerged from nowhere and possessed powers they did not understand.
His discomfort is useful to me.
Underlings should always be uncomfortable in the presence of their superiors, said the Emperor. Don't you agree?
Vader understood the question behind the question and answered accordingly.
Yes, my master.
Good.
The two surveyed the bridge in a silence broken only by the rasping of Vader's respirator while the Perilous crossed parsecs in a blink. After a time, the bridge crew broke into a different rhythm as they prepared to return the Star Destroyer to normal space.
Coming out of hyperspace, called the helm. Coming out of hyperspace, aye,
the call echoed up the bridge.
And the test begins,
the Emperor said. Vader looked at his master, head tilted in a question, not taking his meaning until he too felt the disturbance in the Force.
A ship is coming out of hyperspace, Zira said, her voice pitched high from excitement.
Cham realized he had been clenching his fists for the last 30 minutes.
Activate the mines. Let's pen them in. Shield bleeders on standby. Callan's head tails bobbed with nervousness, and his purple skin looked so pale as to be lavender. The bleeders were his brainchild. As always, he mumbled to himself under his breath. Cham put a hand on Gobi's shoulder.
Be ready to transmit to the droid ships, Gobi.
I'm more than ready, Cham, Gobi said, shaking with excitement or tension. Let's force-feed these Imperials some fire.
Let's do just that, said Cham.
not a terrorist, but a freedom fighter.
As the Perilous emerged from hyperspace on the outer edge of Ryloth's system, the Mammoth viewport undimmed, giving a view of several distant gas giants and the nearby belt of asteroids that divided the outer system from the inner. The system star burned orange and bright in the distance. Ryloth itself was too far away to be visible.
Maximum acceler-, began the captain.
But before he finished, an impact sounded from starboard, and the huge starship vibrated. Heads came up from stations and looked questions at one another. A second impact followed hard after, then a third, larger than the rest, caused the ship to list. Vader eyed the viewscreen, saw nothing. His master stared at the floor, a strange half-smile on his face.
Situation!
The captain ordered, his voice calm.
Sir, I'm a-.
Another impact shook the ship. A fourth. Another. Another. The ship listed farther. Alarms blared.
We have electrical shorts and a few fires all over the ship,
the duty officer called.
Injuries reported.
What is happening, Captain?
Vader stepped forward and grabbed Lewitt by the arm, hard enough to elicit a pained grimace.
Lewitt looked at Vader, at the Emperor, and barked at a scan officer.
Situation, scan!
Mine, sir,
the scan officer said.
Hundreds of them everywhere!
Mines,
the captain repeated.
Full stop! Weapons online!
More explosions shook the ship, and a dozen mines floated into the viewscreen's field of view. They came in all shapes and sizes, some huge square cubes with magnetic sensors, others spiked spheres with kinetic detectors. Vader recognized a few as modern in design, others from the Clone Wars era, others from still earlier.
The shields will prevent any real damage to the ship, my lord, Captain Lewitt said to the Emperor. My apologies for this inconvenience.
Perform a deep scan on this area of the system, particularly on the asteroid belt. I sense something.
Captain Lewitt pursed his lips in impatience.
My lord, this is probably just a grouping of mines left over from the Clone Wars and floating in the outer system. I've heard of it happening. They present no threat to us.
Vader put a finger in the captain's face.
Do as I have instructed, Captain.
Lewitt's brow furrowed, but he dared not disobey.
As you wish, Lord Vader. Scan! Begin to...
Another series of explosions boomed against the ship's shields, sending tremors through the deck.
No damage!
Someone on the bridge crew called.
Shields holding! Sir! There are still over 300 mines out there!
Said the scan officer.
Lewitt couldn't bring himself to make eye contact with Vader. To the Emperor, he said,
My lord, I think perhaps it would be best if you vacated the bridge.
Quite the contrary, said the Emperor. This is precisely where I belong.
The scan officer leaned over his instruments.
I'm getting unusual readings, sir. I think you should see this.
What is it?
Lewitt asked, irritable, though he hustled to the scan station. Vader followed hard after, looming over the captain and the crew member.
This,
the scan officer said, pointing at the readings on his screen. Vader and Lewitt took them in and both understood their meaning. Lewitt cursed and stood up straight.
Sound battle stations! Helm! Full reverse! There are mines on all sides of us, sir! If we reverse, I don't care! Full reverse now!
It's too late for that, Captain.
Vader activated a remote on his armor to get his interceptor prepped for flight.
Alert your flight teams,
he said to Lewitt.
Be ready to scramble your V-wings.
What? Why?
Lewitt asked, looking from Vader to the Emperor.
The shields are still up.
Likely not for much longer.
Do as Lord Vader commands,
said the Emperor, putting just enough power in his tone to quail everyone on the bridge.
Give the command, Lewitt said to the duty officer, and double the power to forward shields.
D4L1 beeped at Zira, and she nodded in response.
Paralysis is reversing.
They detected the bleeders,
Cham said. They all watched the screens as the proximity mines to the rear of the Paralysis blossomed into fire. One, five, a dozen, 20. Looks like very little damage from the mine so far.
So far,
Gobi said, nearly bouncing in his chair. Callan muttered under his breath, tapping the table at which he sat with a forefinger. On the wall-mounted screens, Cham could see the enormous Star Destroyer from various angles, the image occasionally obscured by an asteroid spinning in front of one of the probe droids. Hundreds of unexploded mines floated in space around the enormous ship, trailing after it as it moved into reverse. The next step was the critical one. He could feel Callan's eyes on him. He'd wanted the ship a bit closer to the asteroid belt, but there was nothing for it.
Activate the shield bleeders now, Cham said, and Gobi nodded.
You can do it, Callan said, and kept mumbling the phrase under his breath like an incantation.
You can do it.
They watched the screens, seeing through the eyes of the probes. Callan had re-engineered 24 of the mines. When they contacted a ship's shields, they wouldn't explode, but rather latch onto the shield's energy signature, set up a counter grid, and, in theory, weaken them enough for ships to get through. Cham could not tell which mines were rigged to explode and which were programmed to bring down the shields, but he could tell when the bleeders hit the Paralysis shields and activated. The area of space around the huge ship grew a series of glowing lines, veins in the shield's protective field that extended out from each of the bleeders toward the others. The shields visibly flickered as the lines expanded. The Paralysis looked like it was trapped in a glowing net.
Caught a big fish, Gobi said.
Maybe, Cham thought, still not quite willing to let himself believe.
You can do it,
Callan mumbled to the bleeders.
You can.
Talk to me, Callan, said Cham.
Callan studied the data coming over Zira's comp. D4L1 chirped something that Callan must have disliked. He swatted the droid in a silver dome.
I think it's working,
Callan said.
He glanced up at the screen, at the net that surrounded the Paralysis.
It looks like it's working.
But is it?
Cham asked.
Shields are weakening,
Zira said, also studying the data.
We go then,
Cham said, to Gobi.
Launch all the droid ships.
Gobi issued the signal. Through the eyes of the probes, they saw a fleet of several hundred vulture droids speed out of the asteroid field.
This is it,
Gobi said.
This is it,
Cham softly echoed.
What is that?
Lewitt asked. The view screen showed a dense matrix of glowing lines like bolts of lightning tracing jagged paths along the shields.
Shields at 50%,
the scan officer said, his tone going from puzzled to alarmed.
17! Back to 25!
Get them back up to full, Lewitt commanded.
Full stop,
Vader ordered, and Lewitt did not countermand. With the shields weakening, they couldn't risk slamming into the mines all around them. The helm put the Paralysis into a stop, and the scan officer tapped his screen.
Captain, some of the mines aren't mines. They're devices, creating some kind of feedback loop in the shield matrix. They're not bringing the shields down, but they're weakening them, opening holes in places.
An uncomfortable rustle went through the bridge crew. Vader looked at his master, but the Emperor seemed lost in thought,
a faint smile raising the corners of his thin-lipped mouth. Lewitt stalked from station to station, studying readouts, and when he spoke, his voice was tense.
Get it fixed. Weapons, get a lock on those devices and bring them down.
There are hundreds of mines out there, sir,
the weapons officer said.
A miss with the shields weakened could create a chain reaction of explosions.
Then don't miss,
Lewitt said.
Sir, said the scan officer, I can't be certain which is a regular mine and which isn't.
There are too many and they're too small.
Lewitt swallowed hard. No doubt he felt as trapped as the Perilous. He looked back at the Emperor, at Vader, back at his bridge crew. Another crew member added,
The mines have proximity attractors. If the shields fall, they'll be drawn close and then explode.
Another uncomfortable rustle went through the crew. The Perilous couldn't move and yet had to move.
I need options,
Lewitt said, and the crew buried themselves in data. Vader gave him one.
Launch your fighter squadrons. I'll lead them.
Whatever discomfort Lewitt had with Vader gave way in the face of the crisis. He nodded, relieved.
Of course. The fighters can take out the mines with precision.
Sir!
Said the scan officer, his voice pitched high with controlled alarm.
There are several hundred vulture droids swarming out of the asteroid belt. They're heading directly for us.
Battle stations!
Lewitt said, and alarms began to blare. Vader turned to the Emperor to speak, but before he could say anything, the Emperor said,
You intend to suggest that I remove myself to a safer location? To my shuttle, perhaps, or to my quarters?
Vader nodded. His master often knew his thoughts.
I think I shall remain here and watch matters unfold, the Emperor said. But you should do as you intended.
Yes, Master.
Vader bowed and strode for the lift. As he approached, the doors opened to reveal a fretful Ornfree Tar. The Twi'lek waddled out of the lift, large ears sagging, jowls and belly bouncing, and stared at the viewscreen with alarm.
Oh my! What's happening?
Greetings, Senator,
the Emperor said. And before Tar could reply, Vader gestured with his hand and used the Force to fling the Senator out of his path. Tar hit the bulkhead with a gasp and sank to the ground at the feet of one of the Emperor's royal guards.
Lord Vader is in a hurry,
the Emperor said.
Forgive him.
Vader entered the lift, turned, and stared at Tar as the doors closed. He had little time. The moment the lift doors opened on the flight level, he hurried through the corridors of the Perilous, finally taking the lift down to the fighter bay. Scores of V-Wings sat in neat rows along the flight deck, engines already engaged. The blaring alarms had the flight deck buzzing. Pilots in their flight suits hurried to their ships, and a dozen mech droids wheeled along, beeping and whirring. Eschewing the cockpit ladder, Vader used the Force to leap atop his interceptor and slide into his seat. As he strapped himself in and the canopy descended, the squadron commander's voice came over his helmet comm.
What are we facing out there, sir?
Mines and vulture droids at a minimum, Commander.
Vulture droids? Been a while since I've seen those, sir.
Launch when ready.
Vader said to the squadron as the anti-gravs lifted his ship off the deck. Dozens of V-Wings followed suit. The commander synced the fighters' identifications with the bridge comp, so they could be easily distinguished from the incoming vulture droids and mines.
Clear to launch!
Said the bridge officer.
Lord Vader,
Lewitt's voice said over the private channel.
The shields are at 16%.
Understood, Captain.
Vader engaged his ion engines. His interceptor accelerated out into open space.
Chapter 6.
Can you magnify on the launch bay? Cham asked, and Callan, still muttering, made it happen.
One of the screens on the wall gave a close-up of the Star Destroyer's belly launch bay. And through the glowing net of the dying shields, they watched dozens of V-Wings pour out of it. Cham had anticipated a fighter contingent. A third of the Vulture droids would engage with the V-Wings. The rest would continue on their mission.
"Status of the shields?"
he asked Callan. Callan shook his head.
"Too far out for accurate readings, but..."
As they watched, the net of lines surrounding the Perilous flared and expired. The shields were down.
"Well," Callan said, sitting back in his chair and grinning, "I think we have an accurate reading after all. They're down."
"Yes!" Gobi exclaimed, and slammed his fist on the table, spilling his caff. Even Cham couldn't contain a smile. Vader saw the shields flare and fail even before Lewitt's frantic call came over the comm.
"Shields are down, Lord Vader!"
Scores of mines, drawn by their attractor arrays, floated toward the ship, gradually picking up speed, and hundreds of droid fighters chewed up the space behind them, swarming toward the vulnerable ship. Vader wheeled his interceptor toward the mines and the oncoming Vulture droids. He sensed a greater threat in the droids than he did the mines.
"Free all batteries to fire on the mines, Captain."
The V-Wing Squadron Commander's voice carried over the comm.
10 seconds before Vultures are in range. Target the mines in the interim."
Vader fell into the deep well of anger that sat in his core, used it to center him in the Force, and flew entirely by feel.
He targeted a mine, fired, watched it vaporize, and flew through the flames. Wheeling right, he targeted another, and another, destroying a mine with every shot. The explosions sometimes set off nearby mines, and space was soon filled with a network of concurrent detonations. Vader spun and whirled through the chaos.
"There are too many to get even half,"
said one of the pilots.
"Droids closing,"
the squadron commander said.
"Break off and engage the droids."
Around him, the Star Destroyer's formidable batteries of weapons scribed lines of ionized plasma on the velvet of space.
Mines exploded to Vader's left and right.
He circled wide and up, buzzing the Perilous's bridge as he fired on another mine. Another. And yet there were too many.
The first of the mines reached the hull of the Star Destroyer, latched on to the bulkhead, and blossomed into fire. Two, eight, a dozen, a score. The explosions shot long tongues of flame into space.
Debris and bodies flew out of the blast holes and into the vacuum. Vader could imagine the fires, the death, the blaring alarms. Vader flew above the huge pyramid of the ship, hugging Perilous's superstructure and destroying three mines before they could connect to the hull and focus their blast into the ship's bulkhead. Their explosions did superficial damage, but didn't breach the ship.
"Droids in range,"
the squadron commander said.
"Regroup and take attack formations."
Cham stared at the screens, his jaw clenched, his shoulders hunched as the forces closed. The fighters looked tiny against the backdrop of the Star Destroyer, blood flies to a lilac. The dark of space around the Perilous was alight with weapons, fire, and explosions. Gobi hissed with glee each time a mine struck the Star Destroyer and birthed fire. Cham knew that Callan's re-engineered Vulture droids were not as maneuverable as they would be otherwise, not with their cargo and turgid brains. They would be no match for the V-Wings, but Cham only needed a fraction of them to get through for the damage to the Perilous to be crippling.
"Fly, fly, little birds," he whispered.
The secure comm he wore in his ear pinged. "Isval."
"Speak," he said softly. "Preliminary word of the attack is arriving planetside. It's chaos down here."
"Intercepts?" he asked her.
"Not that I can tell, but I'm sitting in a repair ship. I'm sure it won't be long, though.
Sham looked up at the screen.
They'll be too late to stop this. How's it going?
She asked. Sham stared at the screen.
Vultures are closing. You ready? We're ready, she said.
I'll be in touch, he said, and broke the connection.
On the screen, the fighters, vultures on the one hand, V-wings on the other, lit up space with weapons fire.
And here we go,
Gobi said.
The approaching cloud of vulture droids opened fire as one, their repeating blasters spitting dashes of red energy through the void. Vader swung his interceptor away from the Perilous, burning from dozens of mine explosions, and flew directly toward the oncoming vultures. Lines of energy filled space around him, the solid green pulses from the Perilous and the intermittent red blasts of the droids. Vader let the Force guide him, his hands smooth and rapid on the controls, and the ship danced unscathed in the matrix of blasts. The vulture droids dispersed in all directions as the interceptor and the trailing V-wings approached. Vader fixed on one of them, fired, destroyed it, swung hard right, fired again and destroyed another. Perhaps a third of the droids engaged with the V-wings, while the bulk of them continued on toward the Perilous. Vader's comm was filled with the chatter of the squadron's pilots, calling out to one another, picking targets, holding one another's flanks. Vader picked one of the droids and locked on as it lurched left and right, attempting to shake his pursuit. The vultures were slow, awkward flyers, and something about them struck him as odd. And then he had it. They'd been modified. All of them had bulges on their bellies, an added compartment or weapon of some kind. It made them awkward in flight, far less maneuverable than usual. Curious, he closed on one, targeted it with care, fired, and sheared off one of its wing parts. It spun out of control, and the centrifugal force started to tear it apart. Vader stayed on it as the belly compartment tore loose to reveal its contents. Hundreds of metal spheres spilled out and into space. Vader slammed on a stick, driving the interceptor down, but he could not avoid the shrapnel altogether. The spheres slammed into his ship and clung there, and he saw that they weren't shrapnel, but buzz droids. The magnetic ball sprouted legs and eye stalks and clambered along the wings and fuselage of his fighter, positioning themselves to do the most damage. He dodged fire from a pursuing vulture droid by veering hard left, fired on another, destroying it, then drew on the force and caused a wave of kinetic energy to repel the droids from his vessel. Unable to resist the sudden blast, they flew off in all directions and, to his surprise, exploded with enough force for the series of blast waves to rock his ship and temporarily send him spinning. A vulture got behind him while he was vulnerable, fired, and nicked his wing before he could right his ship and shake the pursuit.
The vultures are carrying a payload of explosive buzz droids,
Vader said over the comm.
He glanced back toward the Perilous and saw scores of the vultures, fat with the explosive buzz droids, flying straight at the Star Destroyer.
Try to keep them off the Perilous,
the squadron commander said to the rest of the pilots, understanding the implications right away. Vader slammed on his stick, whirled his ship around, and headed back in the direction of the Perilous. But he could see that he was already too late. Dozens of the droids had been vaporized in the withering fire from the Star Destroyer, and the more maneuverable V-wings locked on and destroyed many too, but many would get through. Meanwhile, clouds of buzz droids that had survived the destruction of the vulture droids, carrying them, floated free in space, legs and eye stalks waving. Vader saw several latch onto a V-wing as it flew through them. They scurried onto the wings and canopy and exploded, shearing a wing, shattering the canopy, and destroying the fighter. Vader accelerated and flew directly toward a cloud of them, using his free hand to focus his use of the Force as he approached. A gesture,
an exercise of will, and he slammed several of the free-floating buzz droids into one another, where they exploded, clearing his way.
He locked on to another vulture droid before it could reach the Perilous, followed it as it veered left, then right, fired, and turned it to a cloud of flames.
As he'd expected, the vulture droids fired as they approached the Star Destroyer, but they did not reduce speed to increase maneuverability. Instead, they stayed at maximum acceleration, obviously intending to crash into the ship and release their cargo. Vader destroyed another, then another.
But he couldn't get them all, and the surviving vultures slammed into the ship at full speed. Enormous towers of flame rose from the Perilous's superstructure. Vader veered hard left and wheeled around, cutting down another vulture droid as he turned. He could imagine that the damage to the interior of the Star Destroyer was worse than he could see, as the vulture droids would have ejected their buzz droids into the corridors.
The tiny bombs would run deeper into the ship and explode. Two vultures headed directly for the shield generator. He destroyed one and then another, but the buzz droids they carried floated out of the fire of the vulture's destruction, glommed onto the shield generator, and there exploded into flame. Another vulture crashed into the flight deck. Another hit adjacent to the bridge. Many crashed into or near the ship's gun turrets and destroyed them. Secondary explosions rocked the ship. The Star Destroyer was leaving fire and debris and bodies from scores of wounds. Vader flew under the ship, looking for more targets, and saw another wave of vultures streaking toward the Perilous. Curses and exclamations of shock carried over the calm from the V-Wing squadrons.
Stay focused!
The squadron commander barked.
And destroy as many as possible before they reach the ship!
Vader wheeled back around, accompanied by the bulk of the V-Wing squadron, and opened fire on the vulture droids. He destroyed one, another. A V-Wing to starboard caught droid fire and exploded. Callan had stopped muttering, and even he was grinning as they watched the Perilous burn. Gobi could no longer sit, but paced the floor in excitement, eyes on the screens, a smile fixed on his face. But Cham had a better understanding of the ship's ability to withstand damage than did his comrades. They'd wounded it, killed hundreds, maybe thousands of Imperials, but they were nowhere close to destroying it.
Her guns are out of commission! Gobi exclaimed. She's defenseless! Let's finish her!
The second wave, Callan, Cham ordered. And Callan sent the command to the second wave of vulture droids Cham had held in reserve. He resumed muttering to himself the moment he sent the signal. Another 100 or so vulture droids, all of them heavy with explosive buzz droids, powered up and accelerated out of the asteroid belt toward the ship. Cham watched them go, daring to let hope find a home in his chest. He bit down twice to activate the tiny comm implanted in his ear and spoke to Isval.
We may not need you after all, he said. Things are going well.
I hope you're right, she returned,
and he caught the disappointment in her tone.
But we're ready.
Isval sat in the co-pilot's chair of the boxy repair ship on the vast underground landing pad on Ryloth. Beside her in the pilot seat, Eshko fiddled with the comp. The movement had been able to put teams aboard three of the repair shuttles, and now they were just waiting. She wanted to stand and pace, but there was no room. The anti-grav tool pallet and the rest of her team, Eshko, Drim, Crossed, and Phelan, the lone human in their group, filled the cramped quarters of the shuttle. Cham had said everything was going well. If all went according to plan, and things usually did when Cham made the plans, she expected a call to launch to go out shortly. If the Perilous was burning, and she hoped fervently that it was, it would need non-Imperial assistance. Several dozen other repair ships sat on the pad. Maintenance droids and engineers holding data pads moved here and there, checking the status of the ships. The onboard comm was listening in on emergency Ryloth frequencies.
"Nothing,"
Eshko said.
They're not desperate enough yet to call for Twi'lek help,
Isfal said, staring out of the ship.
But they will be.
Meanwhile, there was nothing to do but wait.
And Isfal detested waiting.
Vader eyed the oncoming wave of Vulture droids.
Stay back, Commander. The entire squad. Destroy any ships that get past me.
Sir, but...
Those are my orders, Commander.
Yes, Lord Vader.
Captain Lewitt's voice came over the comm, his tone stressed. Alarms blared in the background.
Lord Vader, I am not sure we can survive another barrage from the Vulture droids.
You won't need to,
Vader said, and cut the connection. Vader fell entirely into the Force, let his anger flow through him, harnessed it for the weapon it was, and flew directly toward the Vulture droids. The mirth went out of the command center, replaced by the quiet of an unspoken question. Gobi gave it voice.
Is that a single ship breaking off? Is that a V-wing or something else? What is it doing?
Cham could not distinguish one fighter craft from another, but he had no doubt who sat at the controls of that single ship.
He's not a man, Isfal had said, and Cham half believed it.
He activated his comm and spoke to Isfal.
I think we may need you after all.
What's happening? She asked, excitement in her tone.
He shook his head. Uncertain.
Vader, I thought we might get lucky, but... Just be ready.
When Vader got within weapons range of the Vultures, the entire swarm broke in all directions and opened fire on him. Enmeshed in the Force, he intuitively calculated angles, velocities, and vectors. His interceptor rising, falling, spinning, wheeling, navigating the firestorm of blaster fire where the margin for error was millimeters. He didn't return fire. His weapon was not blasters. Instead, he fixed on the leading Vulture droids and reached out with the Force. With an effort of will and a slight gesture, he tore open the belly compartment of three Vultures. The tiny explosive buzz droids they held poured out into space. Many of the trailing Vulture droids, unable to dodge, collided with the scattered buzz droids, and explosions turned dozens of Vulture droids and buzz droids into debris. Vader took hold of another Vulture droid's belly and tore it open, then another. Clouds of buzz droids filled space with countless small explosions, wreaking havoc on the Vulture droid swarm. Vader flew through and past them, still dodging blaster fire. He wheeled hard about and pursued them as the surviving Vulture droids, perhaps only a score, made their way toward the perilous.
Allow none of the stragglers through, Commander.
Vader called to the squadron commander as he accelerated in pursuit. Vader had the Vulture droids trapped between him and the rest of the squadron.
He went high to avoid any crossfire and watched the V-wings trade fire with the droids.
The droids hit and destroyed two V-wings, but the rest of the squad made short work of the remaining droids. Debris, fire, and clouds of buzz droids spun through space.
Well done, Commander. Maintain a perimeter. I'm returning to the Perilous.
The Star Destroyer hung against the dark of space, the huge wedge of its superstructure burning in dozens of places along its length. Jagged holes in the hull yawned like mouths. Vader entered through the smoke-filled landing bay and saw the destruction there. Flames were everywhere. Broken tubes vented gas and fluid. Crew scrambled everywhere, some in portable oxygen masks, others succumbing to smoke. Droids, automated suppression systems, and fire teams fought the fires here and there, but most went untended. The damage was more than the crew could deal with. They'd need assistance. Bodies and body parts lay scattered among the wreckage. Ships burned on the landing pad, including the Emperor's shuttle. Seeing that, Vader suspected his master had foreseen much of what had happened. But if so, he'd done little to stop it.
Vader set down his ship, popped his canopy, leapt out, and strode through the carnage and smoke. Wrecked mech droids, the ruins of fighters, and pieces of exploded vulture droids littered the landing bay, smoke curling up from the debris. Emergency alarms screamed. Vader hurried toward the bridge. Throughout the ship, the scene was the same. Crew running about, shouting commands, screams of pain, smoke and fire, chaos, disorder. Vader's anger grew with every step he took. Belcour stood in his quarters, heart racing, nervous sweat putting an uncomfortable sheen on his face. He took a deep breath when his comlink buzzed. This is Colonel Belcour.
Sir, you should get to the comm center right away. The Perilous has been attacked.
Belcour had rehearsed his answer many times. I'm on my way, he said, with just the right amount of alarm and urgency. Status of the Perilous?
Unknown at this time, sir. We don't have details yet. Still awaiting word.
Belcour cut the connection, smoothed his uniform, adjusted his hat, donned his mask, and headed for the communications center. Men and women in uniform hurried through the halls of the installation. The ring of his boots off the uncarpeted floor sounded loud in his ears as he mentally replayed what he would say to Morse. Ahead, he saw the transparent doors of the communications hub. They slid open at his approach, leaking out a gust of frantic comm chatter. He caught snippets here and there. The lieutenant colonel in charge in his absence saw him enter and hurried toward him, nodding at something in his ear comm as he walked.
Colonel Belcour, the lieutenant colonel said. Update, Belcour ordered. His legs felt weak. The Perilous was hit the moment she entered the system, sir.
Again, Belcour's rehearsed answer came quickly to his lips.
Hit? How? By whom?
Looks like the terrorists, sir. But we can't be certain.
Status.
He expected to hear that it had been destroyed, but he didn't.
She's heavily damaged, sir.
Belcour's mask melted in the heat of his surprise.
What do you mean, damaged? I thought...
He caught himself just in time and said,
That's good news, at least. Go on. She sounds heavily damaged from what we can glean. Reports are still coming in. She's limping badly and on fire. Looks as though she was attacked by a whole swarm of mines and old droid fighters, if the reports are accurate. The attacking ships have been destroyed, but she needs help containing the fires and with repairs. Get me Moff Moores on the comm.
Yes, sir.
Belcour felt the soft vibration of the encrypted comm link he kept in his pocket, Cham reaching out to him. He ignored it the first time, and the second, but on the third he looked around, stepped into a corner of the room, and put the comm link to his ear.
Yes,
he said, sounding as though he was speaking only to another Imperial officer.
I've heard, yes.
It is unbelievable. Cham's voice came over the connection.
Put out a call for all available repair ships, including non-Imperial ships, to get to the Perilous and offer aid.
Belcour swallowed his anger and adopted a fake half-smile.
I don't think that's possible. You didn't do what you were supposed to.
The lieutenant colonel was waving him over. He must have reached Moff Moore's. Belcour signaled him to wait.
Do it now, Belcour. Right now. She's burning and she'll go down. Do it.
Belcour's anger at being ordered around by Cham prevented him from speaking for a moment.
I'll see what I can do,
he finally said between gritted teeth and cut the connection. Belcour hustled to the lieutenant colonel.
I have them off,
the lieutenant colonel said.
I'll take it in the conference room,
Belcour said.
Yes, sir.
Belcour composed himself before stepping into the quiet of the conference room. There, he activated the comm, and a hologram of Moore's formed about the triangular conference table. She looked crisp in her uniform and clear-eyed. Belcour did not like it at all. Moff Morse, Belcour began. The Perilous was attacked the moment she...
I already heard!
Morse shouted. She was red-faced with anger. A lock of dark hair escaped the tight bun she wore it in and formed a hook across her brow.
What I want to know is how an entire fleet of rebel ships held position at the edge of the system and no one knew of it.
Our resources are limited, as you know. We don't normally patrol that far out in the system.
That's not my question, Colonel. I want to know how they got there to begin with.
In truth, Belcour had diverted patrol craft and flight clearances in a way that allowed Cham to move the ships into position. But he had been careful to do so using Morse's authorization code. The diversions themselves were not necessarily suspicious. Changes to patrol routes happened all the time in response to intelligence. But if anyone grew suspicious, the investigation would point to Morse. It would be Belcour's word against Morse's, of course, but in that situation, Belcour would come out the better.
He could show that Morse was a spice addict, that she embezzled the proceeds of Imperial mining operations, that she fraternized with known criminal elements like the Hutts, and that she'd shirked her responsibility when she'd thrown the management of Ryloth into Belcour's lap.
Meanwhile, Belcour, loyal to a fault, had tried his best to do his duty. I'll figure out what happened and hold those responsible to account, Belcour said. Meanwhile, may I suggest that we send out an immediate call for all available repair ships to give aid to the Perilous?
Yes, yes,
said Morse, and waved at him to go do it.
Do that. What?
What, ma'am?
But Morse hadn't been speaking to him. She was speaking to someone on her staff that Belcour could not see. While Morse was occupied, Belcour opened the door and called out to the Lieutenant Colonel. All available repair ships, including non-Imperial ships, are to be ordered to assist the Perilous. Do it now.
Yes, sir,
the Lieutenant Colonel said and started issuing orders. Belcour returned to the table and to Morse, who was still speaking to someone Belcour could not see. Something had changed. Morse looked shrunken, collapsing in on herself, her face crestfallen, her eyes fearful.
I need that confirmed,
Morse said to her staffer, a tremor in her voice.
I need it confirmed right now.
Something in Morse's tone alarmed Belcour.
Moff?
He asked, his voice tentative. Morse swallowed, cleared her throat, and sat down.
Belcour, the Emperor and Lord Vader are reportedly aboard the Perilous.
The words hit Belcour like a kick to the stomach. For a moment, he could not speak or breathe. He put his palms on the table to support legs that seemed to have turned to cloth.
The Emperor?
This happened on your watch, Belcour,
Morse said. She sounded small, timid, terrified.
Our watch, Belcour said.
Our watch, ma'am.
To that, Morse said nothing. Thoughts ricocheted around Belcour's mind, none of them making much sense. Had Cham known? How could he have known? He must have. Cham had known all along, and he'd strung Belcour along, and now Belcour was in too deep, and he'd be responsible for...
Colonel!
Morse said, bringing him back to himself.
Ma'am? Belcour said.
Get escorts and repair ships up there, Belcour. And I'm coming down to Ryloth.
Of course. Belcour said absently and cut the hologram. Of course you are. He grabbed the holo projector and slammed it against the table once, twice, until it shattered. He felt eyes on his back. Everyone in the main room of the comm center was probably staring at him. He didn't care. For a long moment, he simply sat there, breathing heavily, any attempt to think lost to the churn of his emotions. Vader. The Emperor. He tried to think of how he could manage events, how he could extricate himself from the hole in which he'd buried himself. He could run. He'd thought about it before.
He could do it. Just get off planet and find some hovel farther out on the rim and...
He knew he couldn't. If Vader and the Emperor were dead and he was found to have fled, the Imperial Security Bureau would hound him to the universe's end, and the ISB always found those they hunted. And if Vader and the Emperor weren't dead and he was found to have fled, Vader himself would hound him. He had to see it through. He had no other choice. He stood, took a deep breath, straightened his uniform, and turned back toward the main comm room. Eyes that had been on him found their duty stations. The lieutenant colonel, standing just outside the room, stood to attention when Belcour's eyes fell on him. Belcour walked through the door and said to him, "Ensure the repair ships have a fighter escort. Do it right now. I'll be... back. I need to check something."
"Yes, sir,"
the lieutenant colonel said, and almost sprinted to a nearby comm officer. Belcour swallowed as he walked through comm central, out into the corridor, and onto a lift, and finally into an officers-only restroom. He stood there, his back against the door. No one else was in the room, so he locked himself in. He consciously unclenched his jaw, his fists, his guts. Vader and the Emperor. Vader and the Emperor! His encrypted comm buzzed. Cham. He snatched it from his pocket, squeezing it so hard it slipped from his hand and fell to the floor. He picked it up, cursing, opened a channel, and held it to his ear. "You bastard," he said. "Do you have any idea what you've done?"
"Calm down, Belcour."
"Calm down? You tried to kill..."
He caught himself and reduced his tone to a whisper.
"You tried to kill the Emperor and Vader." "I'm going to kill the Emperor and Vader. And you're going to help me."
Belcour could not bring himself to agree. Cham must have read into his silence.
"You will, Belcour. You must. The attack already happened. You're implicated. There will be nowhere for you to run."
Belcour cut the connection, his heart racing, sweating under his uniform, his mind filled anew with a static of stress. He paced back and forth in the restroom, back and forth, as the encrypted comm buzzed in his pocket.
"Blast, blast, blast, blast!"
He answered the comm.
"Say nothing, Colonel,"
Cham snapped, pronouncing Belcour's rank as he would an insult.
"And just listen. I told you I'd expose you if you didn't help, and I will. I will. But you're in this now. Did you order the rescue ships? Speak."
"Yes," Belcour answered tightly.
"Good. Now listen to me. Vader and the Emperor and Tar died today. It's about to happen. You don't need to do anything more except supervise the repair and rescue just as you would otherwise. See? Nothing suspicious. See? Do you hear me, Belcour?"
Belcour had to pull the answer up from the depths of his gut.
"Yes. Mors is coming down to Ryloth."
Cham was quiet for a moment.
"That changes nothing. Do as we just discussed. And keep this comm at hand in case I need anything else. Everything turns on the next hour."
Chapter 7. Cham pocketed the encrypted comm and stepped back into the command center. No one even turned to see him enter. All eyes were still on the screens, where the Perilous burned but still flew, moving at full speed through the system, racing toward Ryloth. In truth, Cham hadn't expected to bring the Perilous down with the Vulture droids, though he'd started hoping for it before Vader had gotten in the way. He bit down, activated the private comm, and addressed Isval, though he spoke loud enough for the others in the command center to hear him.
"Phase 2 is a go,"
he said, and the eyes in the room did turn to him then. "The alert's going out in moments. You're up, Isval. The Perilous is burning but flying. heading straight for Ryloth.
Copy that.
Good luck. Callan, Zira, and Gobi all looked at him, brows furrowed in a question. D4 gave an interrogatory beep. Callan voiced their shared thoughts.
There's a phase two?
There is, Cham said. He'd kept it need-to-know only.
Yes!
Gobi said. Cham stared at him until his glee wilted.
What?
Gobi asked.
Did I say something wrong?
This isn't a game, Cham said, thinking of the danger Isfahl was about to put herself in. You understand that? People are dying.
Only their people,
Gobi said weakly.
So far,
Cham said. Let's hope it stays that way. But either way, it's no game.
Right,
Gobi said, his skin darkening with embarrassment.
Right.
Cham stared at the viewscreens. Matters were out of his hands, and the most dangerous part of the plan was just getting underway. Isfahl shared a look with Eshko, a nod, and they waited for the alert to come. They didn't have to wait long before it came over the comm.
All ships to aid an Imperial vessel in distress.
Repair 83, copy that, she said. On the landing pad all around her, Twi'lek repair teams hurried out of side caves and ran for their ships. Other vessels, already crewed, lurched into the air on their antigravs. The onboard computer blinked as pertinent details, clearances, and assignments started emerging from Central. She waited for theirs to come through, and when it did, Eshko got them off the pad. In her secure wrist comlink, Isfahl said to the two backup teams, "We are up. Status?"
"Up and out,"
came the first response.
"Off the pad and waiting for clearance,"
came the second. "Calm silence between us from now on."
Copy that,
came the responses.
Good luck.
She cut the connection and said over her shoulder, "Copy that." Drim, Phelan, and Crossed all echoed her sentiment. Eshko piloted them out of the mouth of the landing bay and into Ryloth's winds. As soon as he hit open air, he accelerated to full in-atmo speed. Ryloth's dry, rocky terrain fell away below them. In moments, the dying light of a planet-side day gave way to the dark of outer space. "We're clear of the outer atmosphere," Eshko said, checking the instruments. "Accelerating to full. ETA in under an hour." A fleet of repair ships, some Imperial, but most Rylothian, dotted space, heading in the direction of the wounded Star Destroyer. As they sped past Ryloth's moons, Isfahl's eyes lingered on the small rocky one where she knew Cham and many of the members of the movement were hiding in one of their long-standing underground bases. V-wings from the Imperial bases on the largest moon, the Moff's moon, fell in as escorts. She bit down and activated the private comm with Cham.
"Flying by you now. We'll soon clear the moon's orbits. I'm going to lose you after that."
"Get in and get out, Isfahl. As fast as you can. Speed is your ally."
She nodded.
"Any Imperial chatter about Vader and the Emperor?"
"Frequencies are buzzing with the revelation that they were aboard, but no certain word on whether they're still alive. The Perilous is heading fast toward Ryloth. It's already past the asteroid belt."
"And Tar?"
Cham guffawed.
"No one cares about Tar except us. But he's incidental at this point."
The communicator crackled in Isval's ear. She was losing the connection. Cham said something, but she couldn't make it out.
"Say again?"
"Think through your exits, Isfahl. You copy?"
She smiled. She should have known.
"Got it, Cham."
The entire repair fleet streaked through the system.
"Got it," Eshko said, pointing at a viewscreen which showed a ship at the edge of the scanner's range.
"That's her."
Isfahl watched as the Perilous took shape as a dot, then a larger blob, and finally a wedge. She leaned forward in her seat as they got closer and the ship got bigger. Phelan, Drim, and Crossed edged up from their seats in the rear cargo area to look over her and Eshko in the pilot's seats.
Drim whistled. Phelan swore. Crossed exhaled, his breath turned bad from stress.
You all right?
Isfal asked him. His Leku perked up.
Me? Yeah, fine.
She's hurting all right, Eshko said, meaning the ship.
She is,
Isfal said. The sight of the heavily damaged Perilous buoyed her.
Look at those fires, Drim observed. Vultures did a job.
Now we have to do ours, Isfal said, to nods all around. The Perilous's forward landing bay was damaged, the edges made jagged and charred, ruining the ordinarily sleek wedge of the ship's lines, giving it a look like a huge mouth open to swallow the stars. The Star Destroyer leaked flames from dozens of different onboard fires, large ones, and that was only what Isfal could see from her angle and distance. She imagined that Callan's repurposed explosive buzz droids had done a lot of additional damage deep inside the ship, or at least she hoped so. It pleased her to think of how many Imperials must have already died. More coming, she said to herself.
How's that?
Eshko said. Nothing, she said. Talking to myself.
You turning into Callan?
Eshko joked.
Muttering to yourself now?
She smiled. Damage from Vultra droids blackened the superstructure all along its length. An explosion had turned the forward sensor array into a jagged metal stub, rotating futilely on its mounts. The ship moved at velocity, sliding quickly through space despite the damage. A haphazard mix of fire suppression ships of all shapes and sizes, both Imperial and Twi'lek, already swarmed the huge ship, spraying suppression foam as directed. The smaller ships matched vectors with the Star Destroyer as they went, keeping pace.
She's heading fast for Ryloth,
Phelan said.
I'm thinking she feels vulnerable, Eshko said.
Smiles answered his wry comment, but no laughter. Isfal had never been so close to a Star Destroyer. And as they neared it and it filled the cockpit's glass, its size took her aback. She didn't let it awe her, though. If the movement wanted to hit the Empire hard, they'd have to hit it at this scale. And they needed to kill enough Imperials for it to hurt. More important, they needed to kill Vader and the Emperor. Her gaze went to the bridge where she imagined they were, if they were still alive.
Stay sharp, people,
she said to her team, and they all nodded, though they too stared at the size of the Star Destroyer with eyes wide. Orders and chatter carried over the comm channel, the Star Destroyer crew relaying orders to the incoming repair ships. Isfal simply waited for the hail. It came within moments.
This is Repair 83 from Ryloth, she responded.
Port 45A,
came the call, along with instructions to the navcomp. She ran a quick check, saw that Port 45A was far to stern, which was a long way from the target. She hailed them.
This is Repair 83. Sir, I have a crew of specialists aboard. We're supposed to assist in engine repair.
Repair 83, there's nothing here to indicate that.
It's chaotic planetside, sir, as you can imagine. The call came and we launched. Orders and manifests are not exactly a priority at the moment. Keeping the Perilous flying is. My team can help best if we assist in the engine compartment.
Understood, Repair 83. Port 266R, then.
Isfal checked the location of 266R, saw that it was near the engine compartment and not too far from the hyperdrive chamber.
266R, she said. Thank you, Bridge.
Here we go, said Eshko.
She felt the change come over her team. The nervous excitement, quiet, shoulder-bunching tension. She felt it too, so she gave them something to do.
Double-check the gear, weapons, and explosives. Everyone armed, but nothing visible. Deep breaths, people.
The team set to it without objection as Eshko steered their ship to Bay 266R. Isfal scanned the comp to see the docking assignments for ships bearing the two decoy teams. She committed their ports to memory.
Meanwhile, the onboard comp matched velocity with the Star Destroyer while Eshko spun them and backed up to the docking port for Bay 266R. The repair ship's port